When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guest today is one of the most dazzling players I've had the good fortune to see up close in my 25 years of covering this league. If you did not see Tracy McGrady in his prime, do yourself a favor, go check his highlights on YouTube. The man was absolutely incredible. A bucket, as the kids say. He got a lot in his bag, also as the kids say. Length, size, athleticism, wingspan, ball handling, all of it. McGrady was incredible. Saddled with some bad rosters, some bad luck, some injuries that cut his career short, but man, he was dominant in his time. Seven-time All-NBA, two-time scoring champion. He's in the Hall of Fame. He had a good case, frankly, for the 75th anniversary team, though he did not make it. T-Mac was an incredible one-on-one talent, of course, and he has recently launched a new venture based on the beauty of the one-on-one game. It's called the Ones Basketball League, OBL. It's here in New York this weekend. It's touring the country. Tracy's got aspirations of making this a global competition, maybe even getting one-on-one basketball into the Olympics, as we've seen with the three-on-three version. We discuss all that. We discuss his friendship and rivalry with Kobe Bryant, talk about his time at ESPN and why that didn't last, his thoughts on today's NBA, and a whole lot more. Before we get to all of that, a quick reminder, please rate, review, subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with Tracy McGrady is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, pleased to be joined in person. I love when I get to say in person. It doesn't happen that much anymore. By a seven-time All-Star, seven-time All-NBA, two-time scoring champion, and most importantly, Hall of Famer, Tracy McGrady. Tracy, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, brother. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. You look well.
I feel good.
I was just saying, looks like you could roll right out there and drop 30 if you needed to.
In today's game, that's possible.
You had a couple years there where you shot the three, all right? You could get out there, stand in the corner.
Three-point line to three-point line is what I can give you.
And we've got authentic New York ambiance now with sirens and an ambulance going by.
It's the beauty of this podcast we're doing. You get everything, all kind of noises.
Yes. It's the authenticity of it. I like authentic. You know, when you're in New York, you need to feel it, hear it, sense it. There's another ambulance. All right, you guys done. Thank you very much. So, congrats. I'm getting you on the same day that we just saw the announcement that Showtime has now picked up the Ones Basketball League. Obviously, a big step for you. This is right now more, as you've called it, you know, proof of concept than a business. This is not really a business model just yet. You are just kind of getting people to see what Ones Basketball League is about. I'm sure the Showtime partnership will help that. So, for listeners who are just hearing about this for the first time, what is Ones Basketball League? And tell me what Showtime specifically you think is going to do to kind of elevate the exposure.
So Ones Basketball League, OBL, it's one-on-one basketball, right? And to me, it's the purest form of true essence of basketball. Growing up playing one-on-one, you know, my entire childhood, all the way through high school, even when I got drafted into the NBA, I played one-on-one basketball just for, I think, what it does for you in terms of enhancing your skill set, enhancing your mental preparation for the game of basketball. And it's a teaching tool as well, because when you're playing one-on-one basketball, right, it's me versus you. And let's say the guy that I'm playing against is a really good defender, right? And I feel that I'm pretty good at offense, but he's a really good defender. It teaches you to how to be able to create shots, how to get your shot off in certain areas. And from a mental standpoint, it challenges you, right, to be tougher, right, because of the one-on-one component. It's more of a, you know, teaching tool than it is people think of street ball. And that's why I'm trying to rebrand one-on-one basketball. So where I get my information from in starting this league, I have two sons, 16 and 13. My boys don't watch NBA basketball. They don't watch college basketball. They just can't sit and watch, you know, live event from start to finish. But they will watch short form content on YouTube. All the highlights, like that's what these guys, the Gen Zers, that's what they love. Just perfect timing for us to do this. Given these, you know, these players out here that all can't play in the NBA, all can't go across season play professional basketball, but they still love the game of basketball, can play at a high level. And I want to give those guys a platform so they can really create a legacy for themselves. And I don't see why basketball isn't in a one-on-one form globally.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's funny because I think the reality is exactly what you said. Your sons are indicative of not just Gen Z, but I mean, I think of a lot of people in the social media age where we don't maybe have the attention span maybe to watch full games, everything else. So I get that part of it. I'm guessing your former employer, the NBA, probably doesn't want to hear that. They cater to YouTube and social media as much as anybody, but at the same time, of course, they would like people to watch full 5-on-5, 2.5 to sometimes longer games.
Well, the thing is, they have their audience
yeah.
that love to watch from start to finish, but there is an audience that just can't watch, you know, 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Need something more, you know, short form. We are trying to cater to that audience. And I think, you know, what we're building, the model that, you know, we have built for OBL is really very entertaining for the eyes. And for those that don't watch basketball, it's hard for you. If you see what we have created, what we've built on our Sundays, and you sit there and watch for 2.5 hours, you're going to leave there wanting more. Because of the competition, it's the games are to a certain number to where the product stays fresh and it's not sloppy. Because I don't know if you ever played one-on-one basketball, you get tired pretty quick and the games can get sloppy. Well, our games, we figured out what that number is, and these guys are playing high level basketball and it's very entertaining, and you will leave there wanting more.
What's the talent level like? Who are so like, and are there names that people would recognize who have been playing?
Like Glenn Rice Jr., his son, Glenn Rice Jr., he won the Atlanta region. So I'm sure people are familiar with him. He went to Georgia Tech. But here in New York, we have like Mr. Basketball, like Atlantic 10 Player of the Year. Like we have those type of D1, high D1 level players that are participating in Brooklyn this weekend.
So it's funny, like in the time that I've been covering the league, and it's been a while now, 25 years, you know, I started covering the league before they made all the rule changes in the early 2000s, which you were around for, of course, in the middle of your prime. And those were about because the league felt like the game, the NBA game, had become too one-on-one, too much isolation.
Yeah.
With the old illegal defense rules, two guys over here, eight guys standing on the other side of the court.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to get away from it, even though part of what we love are those dazzling moments where it's just AI taking his guy off the dribble, Jordan back in the day, you, Kobe. And so there's this tension, I think, in the NBA where it's like you want some of that because those are those mano a mano moments that people kind of like really get psyched for, and the players certainly do. But at the same time, it's, well, we want ball movement, we want a team game.
Right.
We've celebrated the Warriors as being part of that. Where do you fall just aesthetically, philosophically about the game and all that?
I can evolve, you know, whatever era it's in, whether it's back in the 80s where they were playing inside out, 90s inside out, and it started inching out from to the perimeter. You just, as a basketball player, you have to adapt and evolve with the times. Do I have a preference? I wish I played in today's era. Yes, I do. 'Cause I would have prolong my career, not have taken as much, bruises and the bumps on my body. They're catering to the players a little bit more nowadays than they did in our days. You look at, training camps is not the same. All-star breaks is not the same. Like, these guys are getting back-to-backs are not the same. There's so many changes to where, it prolongs a guy's career, which I understand. You got to protect the asset, right? But if I had an era to play in, I would pick this era based off of the rules of what they have today.
Salaries are a little higher now, too.
That should have been my number one thing I said, the salary.
It's funny, I was the one who brought it up.
Right.
But no, like, to their credit, to Adam Silver's credit, because a lot of this has happened on his watch, trying to make the schedule less punishing. You mentioned, like, they don't do 4 games in 5 nights anymore, no 5 games in 7 nights anymore, the 1 week All-Star break instead of a couple of days. And so you're right, like, they are valuing it, I think, in part because those salaries are so high.
Yeah, but I get that you're trying to, protect the asset, but you're really not. Guys are going to get injured. I mean, if you look at the playoffs now, look how many guys are injured. And we're talking key guys, key players, right? In the playoffs have been hurt. Even during the regular season, guys are hurt. Anthony Davis, you look at James Harden with his hamstring. You look, KD was out this year. No matter what you try to do, guys are going to be injured because this game it takes a lot of pounding on your body.
Yeah. How much inspiration did you draw for your league from the fact that the Big Three took off? So 3-on-3 summer, people, get their dose of basketball there. That becomes an Olympic sport. Do you see, and do you hope that this follows a similar path where I know you want OBL to go global? Could you see not so far down the road, like, 3-on-3 took off, next thing you know, it's in the Olympics. Could 1-on-1 be an Olympic sport too?
Without a shadow of a doubt, absolutely. I think 1-on-1, for me, I could see 1-on-1 being a part of NBA All-Star Weekend, right? I mean, we look at the slam dunk contest. Sometimes that's hit or miss, right?
a lot more miss than hit lately.
You understand what I'm saying? So I look at, as you know, if we get this right, maybe some years down the road, this could be a part of All-Star Weekend. Also, we look at this being a part of the Olympics as well. I do want, and it should be, a global sport, right? It's, you look at tennis, you look at boxing, look at fighting, it's mano a mano. Like, basketball is that type of sport where it could be me versus you, and it should be universal.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of appeal to that. I could absolutely see this taking off. The obvious question, so back in your own time, who was the one-on-one matchup that you looked forward to the most or that tested you the most? What was your ideal one-on-one? Because back in the day, you could just isolate on one side and have everybody else standing on the other.
Yeah, so I always look forward to playing against Kobe because I knew what I was going to get out of him every single game that we competed against. Like, the best was going to come out of both of us, right? And from a slightly different angle, I always look forward to playing against Bruce Bowen and Ron Artest because I know they're defenders. And I know that was their assignment to try to stop me. So in essence, it, had me approach the game differently because I know what their specific job was to do, which to slow me down. So that was a challenge in itself. I always look forward to playing those three guys.
Who guarded you the best?
Ron Artest was pretty tough because he was strong, 6'8", long arms, strong hands. And he was a guy, like, you couldn't play around, couldn't dance with him. Like, you had to get straight to business and keep him thinking on the defensive end. So he was pretty tough. But, of course, Kobe got away with everything, right? Kobe got all the calls. When he gets the complaint, he knew how to work the refs. And, he's the ultimate competitor.
You had a couple inches on Kobe, though, and some wingspan on him, too, though. You should have had the advantage there.
The advantage in what part?
Well, just physically. Plus, you could shoot over him, right?
Yeah, I could shoot over him. Yeah, shooting over him wasn't the problem. I mean, it's the physicality when the ref allowed him to get away, more so than what other guys can get away with. That just it. Listen, man, when you a competitor like that and the refs allow you to be physical and they're not calling anything, it is tough for any type of player to get your game off that way. And you got Shaq behind you, right? Like, that's
slightly
tough.
Unfair advantage, you're saying?
So, you know, it was just like the Bruce. I always say Bruce Bowen was a really good defender. But if Bruce Bowen didn't have Timmy and David Robinson behind him, you know, how great would he have been? Now, he was damn good for what he did. But, you know, also having those 2 7-footers behind you helps out a lot as well.
Plus, you didn't exactly have to expend much energy guarding Bruce at the other end. He was just gonna stay in the corner.
That was his job.
That was his job. He did it well.
He did it well. He played his role to the utmost.
On Kobe, so this is really interesting because I covered him from 97 to 04 in L.A., and I remembered you guys as being, you know, I don't know if we would say it was frenemies, friends and rivals, whatever it was, but I, at the time, because Kobe is Kobe, it seemed so much more when he talked about you, the rivalry part than the friend part, because you were both, you know, back-to-back years of preps coming into the NBA. You were compared all the time. There were times I seem to recall Shaq might have wanted Kobe traded for you. And so it was always that element. Mm-hmm. I don't think I knew until you guys sat down with Rachel Nichols a few years back, like how close you guys really were. Like the friends part of that was so much more intense and deep than I think any of us realized in real time.
Oh, no. We were brothers more than we were enemies in terms of you know, basketball, two guys going at it. We were friends, but he's a competitor. I'm a competitor. When we stepped on the court, you couldn't tell, right? Because we're in the lines and we both hear all the noise at that time. Who's better? All the barbershop talk, who's better, Kobe or T-Mac? We both hear that. And then, so now we got something to prove. Like, he wants to prove that there's another level. I want to prove that I'm on another level, right? So, we both got it, but at the end of the day, it was love. You know, I stayed with him when I was, 18, 19 years old with his parents and him, and, you know, spent a lot of time with him. And we just hit it off right away, man, from the moment that we met. And, you know, we started getting reconnected after we retired. And, you know, that was just a devastating thing that we lost that.
Yeah. You guys were both represented by Arn Tellem at the beginning, so I'm sure that helped kind of bring you guys together, too.
And Adidas.
And Adidas, yeah, that's right, before he flipped to Nike a few years in. Were you guys comparing notes during that time, advising each other? I mean, this is early in the prep-to-pro era, and there wasn't a lot of template for that, or guys who you could turn to older teammates to ask about NBA stuff, but not what it's like to be an 18-year-old trying to navigate it. What do you recall about those conversations?
I remember being a rookie, and I know because I had a friendship with Kobe, I know he just went through it the year before. And my first half of my rookie season was so challenging. And I was just like, damn, did I make the right move on coming out? So I had to call him, man, and find out, yo, how did you get through this? Like, talk to me, bro. Like, what did you do to keep, you know, your confidence? And, you know, he was like, man, I stayed in the gym. He's just, I stayed in the gym, and I never allowed my confidence to waver. I know who I am as a basketball player. This is just a test, you know, for us to see how bad we want it, to see, you know, if we're mentally tough to get through these challenging times, because everything, it can't be easy for us. And I was like, yeah, you're right. So, I mean, just having those type of discussions, you know, with somebody that actually went through it, helped me get through, you know, those challenging times.
But you did have those second thoughts, it sounds like, about whether it was the right move.
Yeah, because of what I was going through. I mean, my coach was criticizing me, saying I'll be out of the league in 3 years. Like, you imagine an 18-year-old hearing that from his head coach, like reading those press clippings? That was tough. It was really tough.
Yeah. That would never happen today in the NBA. Among the other things that's changed over time.
Yeah, no.
I think the coaches are a little bit kinder with all that.
Yeah, you think?
Is there a coach you wish you'd played for in the course of your career? Like, when you're going through over the course of your career, you're thinking, like, man, if I could only get to that team with that guy.
I wish I played for the Spurs.
You got to them at the end.
I was done. I wish I had played for Coach Pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, he gets the best out of his players. I played for a phenomenal coach, and Doc was a young coach at the time.
Yes, Jeff his first job.
Yeah, Jeff Van Gundy was phenomenal. Like, Jeff, love Jeff Van Gundy. But to answer your question, yeah, I wish I played for Pop.
Yeah, and not just because obviously the Spurs were among the best at that time, but just the things you think you would have done, he would could have done for your career, or just the structure that they have there.
Yeah, just when I stepped foot into that organization, just saw how things were ran from the top down. It's like, this is how it should be.
Yeah.
Right? And you're getting good teaching.
Yeah. Even in the moment, I think back when you were with them in the finals, I think I recall you were saying even at the time, like, this is not, it's not the satisfaction that you could, like, you were on the bench, you were there, you played some minutes here and there, but it was not.
No.
It didn't do it.
No. Yeah. I was like, why am I here? I was questioning, why am I here? But again, it was out of respect for Coach Pop, because he called me. I think some of their guys were hurt entering into the playoffs, and he needed bodies, and he called me, and, you know, just out of respect, I want to go down there and be a part of it.
Yeah. Player, I mean, this may be obvious, player you wished you could have played with during the course of your career?
Shaq.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Shaq was the common denominator to championships for everybody in our era, right? Yeah. Like, no, he's the player, Shaq.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Yeah, for sure.
And obviously, you and Kobe would have loved to have played together for other reasons, but if you only get back then, it was usually two stars, not three. We didn't have super teams back then.
Give me Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal.
Last time you and I sat down at length, I don't know if you remember, 2010. I was at the New York Times, and you were with the Knicks for that very brief span after that trade, which was unfortunately mostly about getting your salary so that they could then clear room to try to chase LeBron.
Yeah.
They ended up with Amari instead. But we talked baseball that day.
Yeah.
We talked baseball that day. This is the quote. I went and looked back for my old time story. You said, quote, "I love baseball right to this day more than I love basketball."
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote that your fastball had reached the low 90s back in your time. Your dream was to pitch at Yankee Stadium. And some years ago, McGrady even asked his agent Arn Tellem to look into a one-day stint on the mound, perhaps in spring training.
Yeah.
You retired. You did actually then spend some time with
Skeeters.
The Skeeters. Yeah. I love that name. The Sugarland Skeeters in the Atlantic League in 2014.
I think they've changed their name since, but yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad. I love that name.
I still play baseball.
Yeah? Like just adult baseball league?
40 and up league.
40 and up league.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Give me the rundown. Like, what are you playing in the field? Are you pitching?
I'm pitching. I'm pitching and I play center field. In this league, I actually get the bat. When I was playing for the Skeeters, Gary Gaetti wouldn't let me bat. I'll just pitch a couple of innings, and then I'll sit down and watch the game.
What did your fastball still reach in 2014 when you did
that? In 2014, I was like 87, 88.
What's it now?
80. Like 80. 80, low 8, yeah.
That's still pretty respectable.
Yeah.
What are average, like, dads, 40-year-olds, when they step to the plate and you're standing on the mound towering over them like Randy Johnson? What are they?
These guys are good.
Yeah?
Yeah, these guys are good. You know, even some guys in our league are throwing, you know, high 70s.
Yeah.
Lots of movement. Like, they're good. This is, you know, it's not a league where I'm, like, just dominating these guys. No, they're pretty freaking good.
I don't know, man. I don't think I want to step up to the plate with you on the mound at this age.
They're not intimidated at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that like for you? I mean, in terms of, I know, like, all professional athletes, like, those urges never, the competitive urge never leaves, right? Does this satisfy some part of it? And also the fact that you did not go the baseball route during your prime athletic time.
This is doing what I love.
Yeah.
Right? That's just what it is. It's doing what I love to do. I love the game of baseball. I get the opportunity to play it. Like, again, this is my favorite sport. I think they take me for a joke. Like, baseball is my love, my first love. I started at 5 years old. And people, like, guys in my hometown would tell you I was a better baseball player than basketball. That's how good I was. And I've always just loved the sport. I watch it. Every chance I get to play, I'm going to play it.
Yeah. And you're going to keep going.
I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun. So you've got the OBL.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're heavily involved with AAU.
Mm-hmm.
You and Jermaine O'Neal, who was on this podcast back, when was that? September, October? Mm-hmm. We had Jermaine on the pod. You guys have your own player representation agency. So you've got your hands on a lot of things obviously keeping you busy, scratching at multiple kinds of itches, not including what you did for a few years, which was with ESPN. I gotta say, like, I remember at the time feeling like you were a natural for that, but it seemed like you were not necessarily like thrilled with that. You did not, punditry did not.
That's a good assessment.
I could see it. Like, yeah. It's not like you had no problem doing it, but the punditry thing seemed to kind of like not really vibe with you. Like, it just seemed like it was a.
Here's the deal with doing television. Like, this is how why I got turned off. I love talking a game of basketball. What I don't like about it is because everyone has a voice and the headline becomes of, you know, they take something that I say about a player and it's twisted as if I am dogging a player, which I never want to dog any of the players that, you know, is playing this game unless I don't like you, right? But then you could print whatever you want to print. But I don't like the fact that the headline becomes something that I didn't intend it to be and I don't want it to be when talking about, you know, NBA players or talk about these players. And it just rubbed me the wrong way, and that's why I really got out of doing television.
Yeah. I was not surprised when you decided to kind of pursue other interests,
yeah,
as they say. J.J. Redick, actually, you know, J.J. obviously is incredible on TV, mm-hmm. and you could see that coming from a mile away. Before mm-hmm. he retired, he was great on the podcast. You knew he'd be great in that role. But he, in retorting to somebody on Twitter recently who didn't like something he said, he was like, listen, do you understand how this works? They give us these impossible questions,
yeah,
where it's A or B,
yeah,
and you have to stake your claim on one or the other.
That's facts. Yeah.
And it puts you guys in a tough position.
And it becomes a headline.
And because that's what people want to watch. And it's easily then thrown on social media for a 90-second
right.
clip.
So rather me stay in that, and that happens all the time, because I'm going to give you some soundbite, yeah, right? Because I don't hold my tongue. I'm going to give you some soundbite. I'm speaking my truth. But, you know, that's why I had to get out of it, because that's not who I am.
Yeah. It's oversimplified. Everything is reduced to like a couple of thoughts, one take. Along those lines, I wanted to ask you this as we kind of wind down here. There's this sense among like the NBA Twitterati that, you know, whether it's you, Scotty, Chuck, Shaq, Kenny, especially guys who were like rooted in the 90s or just the old guard, like there's this disdain for the modern game, the way the game's evolved, for everything. And there's this feeling, I think, an NBA Twitter, this is probably a younger group too, right? Feel like there's a lot of just old man yelling at the clouds.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn stuff from your generation. Why is that a fair assessment, and why is it, you think?
It's not a fair assessment. It's not. I think it's always the younger generation thinking the older guys are ripping, you know, the younger generation, in which that's not the case. We're just giving our opinion. The same way in the barbershop, you know, if we was having barbershop talk, this is the same talk that, you know, the guys that are complaining, and some of these players, right, when they go to barbershop or they talk amongst their friends, they're talking reckless about other players. But because we're on a platform and it's being put out to the mass, they got a problem with it. They say the same stuff. They say the same things about these players, but we can't say it. Like, I sometimes get confused on a lot of this stuff, man, and how these people view, you know, some of the things that, you know, the older generation say, because they actually be saying the same thing. But it's like, okay, yo, you can't say that about him. You too old. You can't say that. I'm like, bro, we're just voicing our opinion. There's no malice behind it. Like, that's how we feel.
Yeah, I think the feeling is that you guys are diminishing it somehow because it's, you know, with the numbers being what they are these days, whether it's the stats or the money, I guess, that it somehow diminishes than what you guys did in your time. And so there's this feeling like you guys are protecting of your time, your generation, your era by maybe putting down, oh yeah, well, the game today is so different, and, you know, they're not as physical.
But it's true. But it's true. What are we saying that is not true on that? The game is a lot easier today in terms of the rules. you're going to have a lot more scoring. I can understand why guys are averaging, you know, the multiple, not even multiple. Let's see, James averaged what, 35, 36 one year. And then you have a few guys this year average 30. What, Brun in his 19th year averaged 30. Joel Embiid averaged 30. Who else? Like, the game today is a lot easier offensively than it was 10, 15 years ago. That is a fact.
And the,
right?
And the pace is just higher,
and
too.
And the pace is higher. Like, I didn't play in an era where you shoot the ball and get the offensive rebound and a shot clock resets to 14 or 15, whatever it is. No, there's a full 24 seconds left. Right, so the pace, you're getting more possessions. You're shooting more threes in today's game. You can't impede anyone's progress. The game is a lot softer based on the rules. We're not saying the players are soft, people. We're saying the rules make the game soft. Understand the difference.
Yes. And just to clarify, ultimately, when you watch the game, today's players, talent level, style of play, whatever else, I mean, are you enjoying this version of the NBA, albeit different than your own?
No.
No, not as much.
I hate all the three-point barrages. I don't want to see all these big guys standing out there. Like Joel Embiid, like, you were MVP candidate because you were on the block this year, right? Before, you were standing out there shooting, jacking up threes when your ability, your natural ability and where you dominate is in the interior. That's why you were at your best. This is your best season because you dominated inside. I want to see you out there just jacking up threes.
Yeah, it's tough to find that right balance because of the way the game is played today. That, like, being a threat out there also can help out, open up. It's that too, but also it does help open up the floor. And a lot of today's game is about keeping the floor space too. So I get that they kind of need him to do both. And to his credit, he's good at both.
He is. He's really good at both.
There is that. All right, winding down. I know you got a bunch of these to do. Appreciate all the time, of course. I'm just curious, when you assess your own career, not so much highlights, but, like, is there a moment, like, when you think back or when you're telling your kids, someday grandkids, whoever it is, and if you're directing maybe to YouTube, to, like, this is, you know, you want to see how Grandpa T-Mac was back in the day, go pull this up. Is there a moment, like, if you could go, like, live in that moment, it's a game, a series, whatever it is, what's the one that always comes to mind?
The 22-game win streak with the Rockets. Like, to me, when I'm 70, I have my grandkids, like, I'll tell them to go and watch that run. Like, that was an incredible run. If you look at the top five teams that had over 22-game win streaks, you can understand, you know, when you look at their roster, you can understand why they were so good and why they made that run. But when you're going to look at that Rockets team, you'd be like, how the hell did they do that, right? Because we lost Yao halfway through, I think, in like game 12 or something like that.
And remind people who your teammates were for the rest of that run.
Right. So you have like Chuck Hayes, you got Luis Scola, Rafer Austin, jeez, who else did we have?
Was Aaron Brooks on that team? Is that pre-Aaron Brooks?
I think Aaron Brooks was on that team. Like, we had a young team. I think we had two rookies on that team, which was, I think Scola was a rookie that year, or maybe it was his second year. Like, we had a very young team, and Shane Battier was on that team to make that run. Yeah, that time was incredible. Like, I just remember all the media attention everywhere we went. It was like, it was the show. Like, we were the show that came to town. It was incredible.
Yeah, that was a hell of a run. And probably of all the streaks of that size or more that you would look up, you would see, like, Hall of Famers, multiple All-Stars, whatever.
Not that team. Absolutely not.
That was incredible. That's a good one. That was not the answer I expected. I love that answer. Tracy, this has been great. Folks, go check out the Ones Basketball League, the OBL. And T-Mac, we've got to do this again sometime. Good to see you.
Anytime you need me, brother. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Tracy McGrady. Thanks, many thanks to PR ace Joe Favorito for connecting us. Great to see you again, Joe. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.